thank you very much, and we're going to try to get back on time. How much time do I have, Jennifer?
30 minutes.
Okay, we've got to power through this, clearly. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, ayes carry. The minutes, approval of the minutes of September the 22nd, 2016. May I have a motion to have those approved?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those say no. Okay, fine, great. Okay, just a few comments here. Procedurally, we're going to ask Patricia Lee, our general counsel, to brief us on the bylaws and ethics recommendations. We're not going to take action today. This is very this is for informative purposes only. In the interest of time, and no disrespect to non-committee members, as let Patty make her presentation in its entirety, then we can take questions afterwards. And then I'd like to prioritize the questions, if possible, to committee members, and then we'll go to the other members of the board that are here. So, Patty, thank you very much, and would you carry on from here? Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Price. The revised versions of the bylaws and code of ethics provides an efficient, high-level description of how WMATA's governance works and amends specific provisions to promote clarity and conciseness and to align with the best practices of modern-day bylaws and ethics codes. As requested by the WMATA Board of Directors, I had a conference call with the Attorney Generals of the three signatories. We had a thoughtful and productive call, and I have considered all of their comments in this revised version of the governance documents. In a few minutes, I'll take the board through some of the comments and how we've addressed them in the documents. These revised bylaws and code of ethics are a culmination of efforts by a multidisciplinary team of internal and external partners, including the strategic advisor Jones Day. We believe they represent best practices that will assist the board in performing its policy, financial direction, and oversight functions, in addition to assisting board members in navigating ethical issues that may arise in performing their duties. The staff recommends that the board adopt the revisions, but I understand that this is currently just an information session. Yes. And so right now, I'd like to take you through some of the comments of the AGs and how we've addressed them. So I had a conference call on October 7th with the Attorney General's offices of the three signatories. They gave me comments. They focused mostly on the ethics code, mostly on two issues. And the first is the issue of the dual fiduciaries. So if you turn to the ethics code, Article 2, you will see that we've left the dual fiduciaries, the idea of a dual fiduciary in there, and we just made a few minor changes per the request of the Attorney Generals, which does not, again, change the substance or effect of the dual fiduciary nature of the board members' roles. The second comment that they had was regarding their duty of confidentiality, which is also Article 2B as in boy, and that was the communication with the executives in their government. And you'll see that that section is unchanged. You'll notice that in the prior recommendation from Jones Day on September 22nd, they had highlighted. They didn't recommend changing it. They just highlighted as a comment. And that section is unchanged. They also talked about previously in the Jones Day version of the ethics code, you'll recall that there were a lot of comments about MWA. They made it very clear to me that they don't want to model this after MWA, and I confirmed for them that this is not modeled after MWA. MWA was... Metropolitan Washington Airport Authority. And I reminded them, or I confirmed for them, that MWA was only one of seven transit authority documents, governance documents that they looked at, and it wasn't the sole one. But as a result of that conversation, they asked me to take out certain recommended changes or highlighted changes that weren't essential and they were sort of just nice to haves. And so that is also reflected in this current version of the ethics code. They didn't have any comments on the bylaws during the conference call. After the conference call, I did receive a call from one of the jurisdictions, and one of the sections in the bylaws that they raised some concern with is Article 4 in the bylaws, which is the ability or the authority of the board members to delegate to the general manager the authority to appoint and remove officers. And I explained to them that my reading of the compact, in fact, gives the board the authority to delegate that. And it's Section 9A, as an apple, of the compact. And I explained that, and in fact, the board has so delegated that on three separate occasions in 2007, in 2012, and in 2014. And so that was really the only comment they had on the bylaws. If there's any questions about that section of the compact. Yes.
A clarification on that. Article 4.
Excuse me. I said I want to go to the committee members first, and respectfully we'll then come to you. Any committee members have any questions? Please, Paul. I'm sorry.
Yes. There's a lot of discussion now about the safety commission, or the safety, this new tri-jurisdictional safety board.
Mm-hmm.
Did that ever come up at all during your discussions with the attorneys general as it relates to the bylaws? Is it going to impact the bylaws at all?
It did not come up at all. They didn't raise it at all.
Do we anticipate it could potentially impact the bylaws at all? I mean, I know there's a lot of discussion going on about it, and there's been a lot of talk.
Right.
So will it ultimately have some impact on the bylaws potentially?
I don't believe so. Sorry, go ahead, Phil.
I think it's possible that the bylaws may need to reference it, but from what I understand about the Safety Commission right now, it wouldn't change the board's bylaws.
Okay.
Right.
We had a fairly detailed briefing at the last NBTC meeting, and I think it's fair to say it potentially has some impact on what, you know, how WMATA addresses certain safety issues, mm-hmm. potentially.
Well, I mean,
in a more direct way.
Right. So the bylaws are consistent with the compact. So if this new safety commission were to require, for example, an amendment to the compact, and that might change something, then yes, we would definitely have to look at it.
Okay.
Or if it were to change the role of the safety committee, which is also specified in the bylaws, that's the sort of adjustment I was thinking about.
Okay. Yeah, because I was hearing the presentation, and mm-hmm. just sort of wondered if.
It was not raised.
Really?
Yeah, at all.
Are there any other questions from committee members? If so, please speak up.
You discussed the Section 9A that I believe that you were starting to talk about. Could you finish that line?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody would like a copy of the compact, I have them here. It's also in your... the diligent. So in Section 9A, you'll see that in the third sentence of Section 9A of the compact, it says, all such officers shall be appointed and may be... 9A of the compact? Sorry.
She's passing out copies of the compact.
Yeah, let me give you a moment to have the compact. So in Section 9A of the compact, in the third sentence, it says, all such officers shall be appointed and may be removed by the board. shall serve at the pleasure of the board and shall perform such duties and functions as the board shall specify. If you then move, though, and read the last sentence in 9A, it says, all employees and such officers as the board, may designate, shall be appointed and removed by the general manager under such rules of procedure and standards as the board may determine. And so it is that last sentence that I believe gives the board the authority to delegate certain officers as the board deems appropriate to the general manager to appoint and remove.
Any other questions? Okay, Kathy, please. I'm sorry.
I'm confused about this particular section.
Okay.
As I read it, you're making a distinction between board officers and WMATA officers. Is that correct?
No, I'm okay. Sorry. I'm just talking about WMATA officers.
But so when you say WMATA officers, mm-hmm. The first part of that section, it says board officers are. And then you say WMATA officers are. Are those two separate lists of people, or are they all the same?
There's two separate. In fact, a board member cannot be a WMATA officer.
Right.
Yep.
And so when you say the general manager can appoint, does the general manager then appoint board officers? The general manager
No.
appoint board chair, vice chair?
No.
Okay. I think that is what's caused some confusion. Maybe if you could clarify that you're talking about two separate groups of people, and the general manager does not, in fact, appoint the chair of the board, the vice chair of the board, or those folks.
And I did, in fact, make that change. So if you look at the version of the bylaws that was sent up last evening, I in fact, made that change. So it's on page 4 of the bylaws, Article 4. It says officers.
Okay, Article 4.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Officers.
Yep.
So it now reads, the officers of the WMATA board shall consist of a board chair, a board first vice chair, and a board second chair, full stop. And then it says, each board officer shall hold office until his or her successor is elected and qualified, or until his or her earlier resignation or removal, full stop. Then it says, the officers of WMATA shall consist of a general manager, a secretary, an inspector general, a general counsel, a chief financial officer, a treasurer, a comptroller, and such other officers as may from time to time be created and appointed by the general manager. So that was made, in fact, in direct response to the issue that was raised. And it was that last phrase that from time to time can be created and appointed by the general manager. That was the phrase they had concern about, and they thought that that applied to board officers.
Right.
But now that I've separated all the sentences, that clearly only applies to WMATA officers.
Okay, I don't know. It still seems somewhat confusing to me. I don't know if other people have the same reaction. But if everybody else thinks it's fine. I have a couple of other things that I wanted to mention.
Please. Are there questions?
They are clarifications. Let's see.
Now, keep in mind, we're going to take this back to the various attorney generals, and they're going to vet this again.
Right. That's why these are clarifications. Let's
sure.
see.
I mean, so, Ms. Porter, if you'd like, I can split number one and have a thing that says board officers and WMATA officers. So it's very clear that the sentence applies.
To me, that seems clear, so I would appreciate that.
Okay.
The other thing is under Article 2, Section 11.
Of the bylaws?
Of the bylaws.
Okay.
All mine are in the bylaws.
Yep.
Under alternate directors, it says an alternate director may be counted toward a quorum for a board meeting, may participate in an executive session, and may vote at a board meeting only in the absence of the director. It sounds like alternate directors may not participate in executive sessions as a general matter.
I'm sorry.
This is Article 2,
Section 11. On the alternate
11.
Directors?
Yes.
Right. And you're saying that it sounds like they can't participate in what?
The sentence is, an alternate director may be counted toward a quorum for a board meeting, may participate in an executive session, and may vote at a board meeting only in the absence of the director.
Right. And so, and that is as required by the compact. So if you read, so an action means an actual board action. And under the compact, right, an
right,
actual,
but I'm, the question is, I'm action. Asking about the question, may okay. participate in an executive session. That's what I'm asking about. Is the intention of that sentence is that alternate directors may not participate in executive sessions?
No, that is not the intention.
Okay.
I think you solve, I don't want to speak, but I think you solve her issue just by putting some periods in there.
Right. Thank you, Christian.
Go ahead.
Okay. And then the last clarification I had was Article, I'm sorry, I'm going, Article 3 committees.
Okay.
Section 12, committee meetings.
Okay.
It says a quorum requires the presence of a majority of the committee's members. Mm-hmm. Is that intended to not consider the jurisdictions that the board, that the committee members represent? In other words, if you have a four-member committee, mm-hmm. three of those members would constitute quorum.
Yes.
But if not all the signatory jurisdictions were represented by those three members, is the intention that that would still represent a quorum?
Yes.
So this is a change from the way we do it now.
Yeah. So the way the current bylaws are written is that, my understanding is that it referenced the quorum section of the compact. And the quorum section of the compact does require one from each signatory. But that was never intended, in my reading, to cover committee meetings because the compact doesn't address committees. The compact left it up to the board to create its own policies and procedures. And so it's up to the board to create, they may or may not create committees, and you have. So it's not necessary to use that as a quorum. And I think it makes, I think it makes efficiency, effectiveness sense to just say if you have a majority of the committee members that show up, then that should constitute a quorum for committee purposes.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
Yep.
That is a change from current practice.
It is.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one concern and one comment that I would like to relay both
okay.
to staff and the members of the committee, and that has to do with, I guess it's Section 9 that deals with the executive sessions of the board.
Mm-hmm.
My concern here is that there's a change here in that, as I recall the current language, there were some suggested limitations on what can happen at executive sessions, and I would urge the committee to restore that language back into the provision dealing with executive sessions. I say that because I think, while it's not a legal matter, and I take what the special counsel has advised as to what the compact requires or doesn't require as a correct legal opinion, I think as a policy matter, we want to err on the side of transparency. And I think the presence of language which limits or suggests limitations on what can happen in an executive session to confidential personnel issues, contractual matters, contractual bargaining negotiation issues, sensitive business information, and kind of litigation strategy and litigation matters is a good policy guideline that we should have as board members. I say this particularly because I thought we aired a couple weeks ago with a presentation by the District of Columbia's chief financial officer, which I thought was very interesting, but there was nothing in it. It was just a lot of numbers and theories, and it shouldn't have been something that was presented in a confidential format. It should have been presented in a broadly transparent public environment, either as a finance committee or the capital programs committee or some other committee of the board. So I think putting that language back in will give us some good guideposts, and I would urge you to consider that, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Staub probably knows, I suspect that language has been in the bylaws for many years, certainly preceding my 3 years, and it's been something that has been good guidance for the board for many, many, many years, and I think it would be good guidance to be retained and reinserted going forward.
Yeah, thank you for your comments, and that's one of the items that we're considering when we talk to the Attorney General's going back and so forth. So that's a good catch.
Thank you.
Tony, please. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. I'm hard of hearing.
I need to press that button.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Sorry about that.
I do it all the time.
Question regarding Article 2, Section 8 on quorum.
Okay. Yes.
There's deletion of the Secretary of DOT.
Right.
I'd like to understand why that was deleted. And then,
okay,
because it's deleted, mm-hmm, the sentence doesn't make a lot of sense, at least to me.
Okay, so the reason it was deleted, it shouldn't have been in there in the first place, because the way the compact reads, when the federal members were added to the compact, the legislation did not amend Article 8A of the compact. And so Article 8A remains unamended, and so Article 2.8 of the bylaws has to reflect what's in 8A of the compact, which is that a quorum shall consist and no action.
Page is that on? So
I'm sorry.
Three.
Okay. Page 3 of the compact.
That's fine. No, I have it. I was just putting it in other numbers.
Yeah, it's page 3 of the compact, 8A as an apple. And so it says four directors or alternates consisting of at least one director or alternate appointed from each signatory. The federal government is not a signatory to the compact. And so that's why it shouldn't have been in the version that Jones Day put up on September 22nd. We caught that, and that's why we've deleted it out.
So then how would that actually work then? A quorum requires the presence of four directors.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so there's eight principal directors, right?
Yes.
So if the eight principal directors want to have a meeting, a quorum is four. So as long as four members show up, the board can take action, okay?
So the feds don't need to be there.
They don't have to, but they can be. And and
I was looking for now.
And so the way the quorum works is, so say only four board members showed up for a board action meeting. Three of those four have to be, one has to be from D.C., one has to be from Maryland, and one has to be from Virginia, because they're each signatories. And that's what that means. The fourth director to make a quorum could be one from one of the signatories or from the federal government. But that is what's required for a quorum.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Are there any other questions? I have a motion. Going forward, you're going to go back to the particular Attorney General that had questions in reference to these items.
Yes.
What is the procedure after you've done that? And hopefully you'll get it done by next week, because I want to move this toward the agenda on the 27th.
Yes. So my plan is I will contact the Attorney Generals and reach out to them on the executive session language that they would like to add back in. And I really have no concerns about that. If they want to add that back in, we can. We'll agree language, and then I will send out a revised version and highlight the changes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, one last request.
Please.
Have you talked to General Counsel, the Department of Transportation?
No.
About the change?
The U.S. DOT? No, I have not. Would you like me to reach out to them?
Yes, please.
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay, there being no further questions, no further business to come before the committee, may I have a motion to adjourn, please? All right, second?
Second.
Okay, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, those all in favor, hereby adjourn.